is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. Another conversation with one of our lawmakers, State Senator Floyd Przanski. Joining us this afternoon, Floyd, I wanted to start out by getting maybe an update kind of on where the budget process stands. I've gotten some questions about kind of the order of budget priorities this time around. Oftentimes, session to session, it varies a bit. I know for a number of sessions, lawmakers look to fund education first, and I'm curious if that might be the case this time around or if things are going different.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to tell you what the gurus, meaning the tri-chairs, are really thinking. I know that they're really being cautious, even though we're getting a lot of money coming into the state from the Fed on the, RAP, Rescue, I can't even remember what the terminology is. But at this point, I think that they are still wanting to maintain the continuity that we need, the American Rescue Plan, that's what it is. So my understanding at this point is still pretty standard. They are trying to figure out where we had voids based on what happened through some of the current cycle. We did a rebudgeting, was that 2 weeks ago, I believe, for the current biennium that we're in. I do know that today is the deadline for all members, both House and Senate members, to submit to their appropriate leadership suggestions or recommendations for projects that could be funded by the American Rescue Plan. And this is money that does have some strings tied to it, but we have not heard all of the strings that are attached. But this will, in fact, allow for some one-time funding opportunities. Not something that would go into perpetuity, such as salaries and stuff like that, that you have to pick up ongoing. But, you know, we're looking at some things around the fires as to I put in a request for trying to help Douglas County recoup some of the money they put out on the Archie Creek fire when it first started. And also similar type of things up in the on the McKenzie River on the Holiday Farm fire. Connectivity is one of the areas that I've really continued to work on, trying to make certain that all of the communities that have been displaced can actually get back to their homes, rebuild, and actually have the ability to work from home and make connections back into, you know, the other portions of the county and the world by having, you know, connectivity for internet services.
Well, and we know that that has definitely been an issue, certainly near the front end of the fire time, but even beyond, because so many of these areas are very rural, and a lot of the infrastructure, meaning getting the line from point A to B, may have been partially, if not more, damaged along the way in one of these fires.
That's very, very true. And, of course, most of that is hardwired and above ground, and so you can only imagine all that stuff needing to be replaced. We're looking at, I know the federal government is also looking at bringing in additional resources, meaning additional money to help with the connectivity. But as you're saying, you know, the demand is really amazing, of course, with the pandemic. Not only do you have students that are displaced from school, even though you were seeing some start up again, but, I mean, going through that process of getting kids where they can actually be online to learn, and you know, if you're in certain areas of the state and more rural areas than not, you just don't have that capability of making those type of contacts on a systematic, regular basis that's not challenged.
And along that same lines, that ties into something I saw last week from one or both of our U.S. senators regarding putting hotspot or Wi-Fi in school buses on a long-term basis to address that, not only for, this wasn't really tied to wildfires so much, but for rural areas and in places where it wasn't as good so that kids could, for instance, work on some of their homework during a long bus ride home.
Yes, I think that's true, and you know we are seeing some of that, you know, creativity-ness. But the reality, of course, is we need to think about what we need immediately to ensure the kids are not going to be left behind. And knowing that the schools are going to be in flux, I think, through the end of this school year, with having any normality back in any type of in-classroom teachings, we're probably going to still not get all this right before the end of the school year, just in the sense of being able to set new cable and moving the Internet closer to connecting. But it's one of those things that we need to do sooner than later so we don't have these ongoing issues. And as you know, parents also need to be able to connect to their works. If they have that capability, they're able to actually work from their residence and not have to leave the kids at home and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of, as you can imagine, issues to be dealt with.
In the aftermath of these fires, of course, the Federal Emergency Management Agency has had a presence and been involved in a lot of things at the federal level. It seems like basically the help has kind of been carved out with the federal level doing certain things, state doing certain things, counties doing others. Is there the potential from Salem or maybe passed down from the federal level to get additional help to some of these counties? You mentioned your efforts with some of the costs incurred at the front end, but also, I mean, there's going to be a lot of long-term things that are going to be done. Folks at FEMA tell me this is going to be a several-year process to get anything close to partially redone to look like it did before.
Several years is optimistic from my perspective, especially on the rebuilding for families that have been displaced, lost their homes. I mean, I was on calls this morning talking about Lane County having issues, or at least architects trying to get into the county planning, trying to confirm that what exactly they need to do for some of these folks. I mean, some of these professionals are actually giving their time pro bono without fees to actually try to help people, but they're running into roadblocks because of just the timing structure. I've heard today that for those up in the Holiday Farm fire, they're having one day a week that county officials are going to a designated location for like a four-hour, five-hour period for the one day in the week for appointments only. And as you can imagine, how long is that going to take if we keep that type of schedule for everyone to be able to be heard and actually get information so they can actually put their plans together for the rebuilding? You know, we are working on the Senate side. We just passed a bill this week, Senate Bill 405, that is in fact going to give all of the homeowners more time than what was under current statute to actually be able to address their needs to actually rebuild. What I mean by that, where if it's a non-conforming use of the land, you normally have to be using it every year, every 12 months, or you can lose that designation, have to go through this whole complete review and processing to regain it. So we've set it up where I believe it's going to go up until 2025 on the areas of fires, and then at the same time, because of the COVID, we have other non-conforming use permits that were denied being able to be used, such as a summer event, summer camps, because that the government said you cannot hold these events. And so it's not right to penalize them and say, well, now you've lost your right to this non-conforming use because you didn't use it in the last year. So that's also being fixed. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that are unintended consequences that we can address and we should, so we don't take away normality for people.
One more thing in this arena before we move on to other topics. One of the other aspects I've heard about as well is from the state land use planning level, maybe the county planning level at various points as well. But you have properties in these rural areas that have been there for decades, maybe since they've been built. Some land use regulations have changed. Maybe if that piece of property had never been built on, now there might be something in place that says, no, you can't have a house there. But there was already a house there for the last 50 years, working through things like that so people don't lose the use of their land just because their property was burned down.
That's true. And those are some of the really finer points and touchy points for everyone. Both the states trying to accommodate as well as the counties as well. But there's got to be some direction, I think, from the state to the counties to ensure there's some type of what I'm going to call equity across the different counties, because some counties may be more laxed or more willing to work and look at alternatives than what the codes may provide now. You know, at the same time, there are those codes have been updated and amended for various reasons, including quality of water quality. So you don't want to give on that necessarily, but you want to see how can you help someone relocate maybe a little bit further off the river if they're right on the river in a riparian area, and making certain their septic is in a appropriate position and location for it doesn't leach through, I should say, and cause contamination. So I hope that we're going to continue to see that we are here to help you mold, and at the same time understanding that there's going to have to be some give and take on some of the new regulations to some level. You know, and I think that's really a case-by-case on a county level. I don't really think we as a state want this to go under a complete central control. And so we got to make sure we work with the internal system as well.
All right, more when we come back with State Senator Floyd Prezansky. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1247 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson at 1, Dr. Gregory Brigham of ADAPT on Mondays inside Douglas County. State Senator Floyd Prezansky with us now, checking in a lot of different legislative topics. Business hurt big time by the impacts and sometimes the restrictions of COVID-19 as well. Any more you're hearing about potential ways to help out the business sector of Oregon's economy?
Well, I mean, everyone's trying to do what we think we can get done. I mean, clearly with the relief coming in from the feds is going to add a lot of, I think, breathing room for individuals in business to be able to maintain, I guess, some type of control and sensibility of normality, which is not normal, that's for sure. The issues around other additional funding and situations of trying to reopen, you know, clearly some of this area is just based on what's happening with the virus itself. You know, this unfortunately, I saw yesterday for Lane County, the new case load jumped up to 50, where it's been down below that. And, of course, the concern is with spring break, we're going to have another surge. And I'm hoping that everyone understands that, you know, just because we're starting to see some numbers going down and opening up for a little bit more openness for not travel, business, et cetera, we still need to be very safe in our practices, including wearing the mask, washing our hands. You know, safe distancing is so important. And I think the real issue, as you have heard, Kyle, you know, is the variants that are coming up now. And how effective are the vaccines we currently are administering for those? And, you know, that's still up for judgment. And so it's really important for us to look at different ways of maintaining that continuity that we want, as to not having us go seesawing back and forth between high versus lower risk categorization for the counties.
I know one of the things I've heard, I've talked to a number of folks who have restaurants or bars who, when the shutdowns have occurred and service is very limited and you end up laying percentage of your staff off for a period of weeks, sometimes they grow tired of it because they're trying to keep their families fed, et cetera, and they move on to other things. And then when you can reopen, suddenly you're scrambling to find staff. Restaurant to bar sector has really been especially impacted by this whole situation.
They really, really, really have. And it's one of those situations that knowing the individuals that fill many of those service-providing positions, that usually they have, and I hate to say this, more than one job at different locations to make ends meet. And, you know, it's very, very trying to see those individuals suffering as much as they are. And, you know, if they get an opportunity that may give them a little bit more stability in their work and having money coming into the door to put food on the table and pay the rent, you know, that's really, really important for us to do whatever we can. I'm hoping, again, with the amount of money that we're seeing coming in from the feds, that our state does, in fact, honor those needs and ensure that those individuals that have been suffering so much can have more stability and not be needing to jump from one position to another just because the current jobs they have just aren't available.
Where do things stand on your sentencing proposal? I know that's got a lot of discussion around Salem.
It's still coming around. I mean, we just had more calls on it today. I think we're going to look at how we can move forward with some modifications of what's in the bill now. You know, clearly the goal here is to get the judges back engaged. Mandatory minimum sentencing is a one-size-fits-all, and it does, in fact, impact the ability. In fact, it basically limits a judge, prohibits a judge from being able to fashion a sentence that's most appropriate for an offender based on the case, the facts, the needs of the victim, and just the actual commission of the crime. And when you have people that make up the mandatory minimum sentencing of the 70%, well, the number I heard was close to 70% of those under Measure 11 are first-time offenders. And the vast majority of individuals I spoke to that supported Measure 11 thought it was like California's three strikes and you're out, not one strike and you're out. So this is where we need to have more flexibility for judges. We had two judges that testified. There are retired judges because, you know, a sitting judge just can't give this type of testimony. But they made it very clear, and one of them was a professional prosecutor for Lane County for 17 years before going onto the bench. And he said that this doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't allow for the flexibility that our founders had in our sentencing. We've always relied on judges to make that independent decision based on what the advocates put before them. And it shouldn't be one of the advocates setting a sentence based on the charge they have, because then you shift the power and the control over not only that individual, but others as to how they are dealing those cases. Because as you can imagine, if you have three charges that could potentially put you in prison for 15 years that are run consecutive, and they say, well, we'll give you one that you only do 2 years, and then you can get out, you're going to take that deal, and more likely, even though you may not have committed the offense. The stakes are just so high. So I was really pleased that we had judges willing to step up and state what is happening. And we have three district attorneys in the state that have publicly said that we need to get back to what we had prior to Measure 11 and allow the advocates to present their cases to the court and let the judge, he or she, make that decision and hold them accountable if we don't like their decisions.
How is the Oregon Health Authority and the counties, how are we doing on the vaccine rollout?
Well, you know, that's, again, one of those things that I'm hearing good things. And that, what I mean by that is it seems like there's a little bit more continuity at the federal level, because that's where the vaccines are coming from, you know, for allocation into the state. What a lot of people may not understand is that you have your county systems that are set up that run through OHA, Oregon Health Authority, but you also have the private pharmacies that are also offering shots, and they're working off a different database in the sense of who, if you sign up for the counties, that doesn't mean you're signed up on the privates. And, you know, for myself, I guess I'm going to say age before beauty. I was able to get my second shot yesterday based on my age and such. And I went online and found, went through the, actually Safeway, Albertson's pharmacies, and was able to get in my first shot, which was the first week of March, scheduled within 3 days of, 4 days of when I went online. And so, you know, I do think that it's there. We're seeing more of the Johnson & Johnson starting to be released. You may have heard that we had two cases that have been identified in the House of Representatives in Oregon that are COVID positive. And because of that and the scare and everything else, the governor has made arrangements along with what the CDC had already said about legislators being essential workers. And we're going to have, for those who have not received their vaccines, an opportunity for them to get theirs this next week. I believe they're going to give them the one shot, so the Johnson & Johnson. And that will hopefully get us in a better position to start looking at how we can get our jobs done on time and whether or not we can get that point of getting the communities and the public back in the building.
All right, out of time for now. We'll check in again soon. State Senator Floyd Przanski, thanks for being on.
Kyle, thank you very much. Have a good day and be well.
1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.